Welcome to RHRealityCheck.org's RealityCast, where we inject truth into the sex and reproductive health debate. Each week, we'll be bringing you news, opinion, and advice on sexual health issues, as well as interviews with some of the most prominent names in sexual health advocacy. Here's your host, Amanda Marcotte.
On this episode of RealityCast, Daily Show and Air America founder Liz Wenstead will be on to talk about her new essay collection and feminism. A couple of court cases in red states are worth watching, and the new show, Savage U, exposes the continuing problem of slut-shaming on campus. You know the war on women has gone big time when it's a joke at the White House Correspondents' Dinner.
Jimmy got a start years ago on The Man Show. In Washington, that's what we call a congressional hearing on contraception.
The whole thing demonstrates one good thing to come out of the whole war on women. It's caused pro-choice politicians, including the president, to make a lot of speeches about the importance of contraception. In the past, a lot of political figures were uncomfortable with the topic, but now discourse about it flows easily. Most of the press attention lately on the reproductive rights front has been on the legislatures, for good reason. That's where most of the attacks on women are coming from, after all. But it's just as, if not more, important to watch the courts. It's plenty easy to get legislators on board with stripping human rights away, I'm afraid, but the whole point of the courts is to protect them. Sometimes they even bother to do that job, though sadly not as often as they should. With that in mind, a couple of stories, one positive and one that's a mixed bag. First, the mixed bag from Texas.
Planned Parenthood catches a break. Today, a federal judge in Austin stopped Texas from banning Planned Parenthood from participating in the state's women's health program. The law passed by last year by the Republican-controlled legislature here. It forbids state agencies from providing funds to an organization affiliated with abortion providers. The judge thinks that law may be unconstitutional and wants to hear more arguments.
This should have been straightforward good news. Except that the Fifth Circuit Court, which is notoriously wingnutty, immediately stayed the decision. I'm not really expecting good things to come out of this. Conservatives who are supporting Texas blocking federal funding from Planned Parenthood claim that it's about abortion. But in fact, that's not what it's about at all. The federal funds in question don't go to abortion, but are for contraception. There's no reason to rehash all the evidence for the contention that the anti-choice movement hates contraception right alongside abortion here. Just let's be clear that this is an attack on low-income women's right to use contraception. Texas is one of those states that had huge rallies in support of women's rights in response to these attacks on contraception access.
For the Texas Women's Health Program at Planned Parenthood Clinics. Yulissa McCoy is a 23-year-old UTPA student and one of about 6,500 women in Hidalgo County alone who relies on health services offered at Planned Parenthood under the Program for the Poor.
It's allowed me to seek the preventive and reproductive care that I need as a woman, as a young woman.
Texas wants to ban Planned Parenthood from participating in the state's women's health program because the organization provides abortions.
But as this community's Planned Parenthood program demonstrates, this has nothing to do with abortion, but is just a larger attack on the very concept that women have a right to be healthy even if they're sexually active.
Planned Parenthood CEO Patricio Gonzalez says none of the clinics in the Valley offer abortions and calls the move to exclude the organization from funding a political ploy.
It does not subsidize in any way any service. We can't even counsel on abortion on this with this program.
They don't even offer abortion in their clinics. Under the program, they don't even counsel women on abortion. Flinging the word abortion around is just a ruse to attack contraception. Let's be very clear about this. Unfortunately, I fear the Fifth Circuit is so radically anti-woman that they're going to uphold the Texas law, no matter how much it violates federal law. But we'll see. In Oklahoma, the news is more straightforwardly good news.
Some new information tonight after the state Supreme Court struck down a personhood petition. Paul, you've been looking into what's next.
That's right, Jessica. They did strike down this petition, and it would have given a fertilized egg the rights of a person. A similar bill in the legislature was never heard. Well, today we talked to the ACLU, who brought us the lawsuit against the petition, about what they expect going forward.
The ACLU will remain vigilant going forward to ensure that reproductive health services that are available to women in Oklahoma today remain available tomorrow.
Now, we also talked to the group behind the petition. They sent us this statement. It says, "We are more determined than ever to rise up against judicial tyranny and cowardly state representatives who do not represent the will of the people of Oklahoma." Supporters of the bill say they will appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court.
It's important to remember that personhood is not just a challenge to abortion laws, but would also ban common treatments for infertility, be used to prosecute pregnant women for child abuse for everything from drinking to not taking prenatal vitamins, and could be used to criminalize miscarriage. It could mean that women of reproductive age couldn't receive treatment for cancer, surgery, or any other kind of treatment that might affect a fertilized egg, which would kill a lot of women. Proponents also hope it can be used to ban female-controlled hormonal contraception, even though there's no evidence that such contraception has an effect on fertilized eggs. Personhood proponents are all bluster. Even with the Supreme Court as conservative as it is now, this bill just seems too radical for them. I just don't think there's a majority of justices who hate women so much they want to classify all of them of reproductive age as potentially pregnant and therefore unable to get basic medical treatment. I'd like to welcome Liz Wenstead to the program. Liz is a comedian and a repeat founder of things, including The Daily Show and Air America. She's got a new and hilarious memoir out titled Liz Free or Die, and she's here to talk about being a feminist in something like five separate cutthroat fields. Welcome to RealityCast, Liz.
Hey, thanks, Amanda.
So comedians are putting out a bunch of loosely tied together essays that are memoir-ish is a pretty big trend right now. It's a little different than a traditional memoir, but it's more fun to read. How did you decide what stories to write for it?
Well, you know, I was trying to figure out a way to, because even as a kid, I was sort of this unconventional person. And because of that, shit just flew at me since I was five. And so I wanted to pick sort of experiences or touchstone moments that would give women, anybody who feels like they're an oddity in society, just trying to find their way, some sort of either comfort or truth or insight into the fact that you know, the whole thing is kind of hard. And if you're a little bit off, it's going to be tougher, but it's sort of worth the journey.
One thing I thought was pretty cool about the book was it was like really optimistic about these sorts of things. You seem to just feel like vim and just gusto will get you through a lot of things. Am I right about that?
You are right about that, because the bottom line is when you look at life, and anybody who has some kind of goal is going to miss out on a lot. If you're not like in the process is life. And sometimes that's really shitty. But hopefully you'll pay attention enough to the shitty stuff and learn from it. Learn like what your role in is in the shitty. Learn what like the like permanent shit is so that you can navigate it or avoid it. And then learn where the good stuff happens. You know, so often, especially if you work in entertainment and stuff, you know, I became very hermited when I would be around a lot of folks in the entertainment world, because they were constantly looking at the success of others and then kind of like judging themselves or being angry about people that they didn't think were talented. And I was like, but you're not a garden variety person. You know, you like music that's kind of off and food that's kind of off and adventures that are kind of off and people that are kind of off. Why would your art be something that was this massive successful thing? Stop comparing yourself and just figure out where your place is and then cultivate that. And it's fun. So I look at, you know, there, especially now with, you know, social media and stuff, you know, we don't have to rely on all these old conventions that were at one time in the panoply of how you get your art out there, the only places you could go. You know, late night television used to be the place that you had to achieve to have people know who you are. Well, you don't have to do that anymore. You can take your craft and you can learn how to shoot on your computer and put stuff on YouTube and find small theater spaces and go about things in a whole new way. So in a lot of ways, things are up to you. And the reality of the kind of work that you want to put out there is something that you've got to recognize within yourself, so that if you do things that are going to be maybe a little bit off and appeal to a small but dedicated group, cultivate those people and nurture them, and they'll be in your life and want to support your work for life. And that's a really cool thing to find out.
I heard you read an essay from your book at a New York fundraiser for Planned Parenthood about your abortion experience in high school. Or actually, it was really more about your like crisis pregnancy center experience.
Right.
Can you talk a little bit about that piece?
Yeah, absolutely. I got pregnant the first time I ever had sex when I was in high school. And I was brought up Catholic and had all the sort of natural guilt of being a sexual being in my teens, because you weren't supposed to. You were supposed to reject it. You were supposed to not, you know, indulge it in any way. And so when I did, in my foolish 16-year-old way, which means, hey, I'm Catholic, so how I'm going to deal with it is minimize the sinning. So if I and have birth control, that's two sins, right? But guess what, Amanda? If you don't use birth control, then you're only having one sin. So like a moron, I just fucked without birth control because my 16-year-old brain told me that was a good idea and made me somehow a better person. And I found myself in trouble, and I found myself at one of those crisis pregnancy centers that have these imposters who wear a lab coat and carry a clipboard, and they sort of look like doctors until you go, oh, wait, the clinique lady also wears that same lab coat. Anybody can wear that lab coat. And they send you through a rigor of specific language that they use. They totally shame you for, A, having sex. When I asked her about abortion, it was very telling because she said, abortion's against our law. And you hear that, and you're 16, and you're like, abortion's against the law? Now I've sinned and I want to commit a crime, you know, when it's not against the law, but her religious law, you know, they throw these words in, they manipulate you. And I just knew that I didn't want to be a mom and have a kid. And I knew that I needed to have an abortion. And so when I asked about that, she was so freaked out. And I was like, showed me pictures of those big fetuses that they have. In those, they have that one picture that's iconic with that movement, which is this stillborn baby that's just mutilated. And it's like, I feel like it's the only picture anyone's ever taken in that movement, because, right?
Yes.
You know what I'm talking about, right? It's the only one I've ever seen, and it's blown up. And I don't even know what its original, is it a thumbnail saw? Like, I don't even know anything. But I just know that it's really freakish. And so I was like, I got to get away from her. I don't trust her. She isn't asking me anything about whether or not I'd be a good mom. And so when I left there, I was like, can I think about this? Of course, she was thrilled to have me think about it. And she said to me, your choices are mommy or murder. And I just thought, man, even at 16, I was like, that cannot be correct. That cannot be correct. No. And so I got back on the bus completely freaked out alone, because of course I was dating some douchebag hockey player who was, you know, had all of the, you know, sympathy of a guy with a mullet would have, you know. And so I got back on the bus and I sat on the other side of the bus where I saw the ad for the crisis center, and there was an ad for Planned Parenthood. And I went there and had an abortion because, A, I knew I wanted to, but B, these women there, it was so fascinating because they asked me questions about my life and who I was that let me draw the conclusion about what I needed to have, which was massively important at that point because there wasn't really an adult I could turn to. And the reason I tell this story is because I'm not extraordinary. This happens all the time. And I think that we don't talk about reproductive health as a normal thing that happens constantly. You know, I just had lunch with a friend of mine who runs her title is communications director of Planned Parenthood of the Pacific Northwest. And she was in town in New York, and we were talking, and she said, you know, by the time women are 50, one in three women have had an abortion. And why is it that we hide this and shame ourselves so much? It's something I don't understand. And so I just decided to start talking about it because, as you know, being a feminist and somebody who is a political person, they demonize us for having opinions anyway. So we might as well start voicing not only our opinions, but who we are in public, because we need to just have a solidarity about it and stop saying things that make us feel weird, like in the debate of birth control. Like, you know, I think it's super important to talk about the fact that birth control pills also help with endometriosis and migraines and all that other stuff. But you know what birth controls do? They help you for not get pregnant when you're fucking. You do. And that's what I am embracing, because I am not embarrassed to say that I figured out how my body works and I like it and I like to have sex.
So you, obviously, I mean, I think it seems pretty obvious why you went on this sort of fundraising tour of Planned Parenthood, but can you kind of talk about the extent of how big it was?
Yeah, I had been doing, reproductive health, fundraisers, you know, since I set foot on stage, and, you know, raising money for these organizations and, you know, a lot of times what they are, they're, you know, it's necessary. These people need money. And so when you don't have money, you know, you can usually throw one event a year and it has to be kind of a big deal, right? And so they usually have these big $500 a plate dinners where, you know, luckily men and women come and they have the dinner and they can raise a good hunk of cash. And they're super important. But what I didn't see at these events were the secondary gathering of sorts of actually women who maybe don't have that kind of money, but want to be part of a community, want to raise some money, some kind of event that felt youthful, that felt fun to go to, that was an extension of the way we live our lives, that maybe cost $35 and people could come. So I thought, I was in Minnesota finishing my book because I had gone there on a writing sabbatical and I had to drive back to Minnesota with my dogs in a van. And so when all of this bullshit started coming down on a national level with defunding Planned Parenthood, you know, 18 months ago in January of 2011, I was outraged. And then when it didn't pass and it just immediately started flooding state houses around the country and these draconian laws were being introduced, I thought, I got to drive back. Why don't I drive across country and do a whole bunch of benefits that are cost effective, that will gather young women together and see if I can't help people start wanting to tell their stories if I tell mine, do my comedy, tell my story, and get people to start talking. And so it started out as 6 shows driving across country, and it's ended up, I think I've done 21 so far, and I've got about 4 on the books right now. And it's been an incredibly wonderful experience to see exactly what I had hoped for happen. Young women and men, people who had a story not dissimilar to mine a lot of times, who were like, wow, now that you tell that story, I kind of feel like I want to start telling mine. And so that was the goal and that was the hope. And I think that it's paying off.
So we have time for one more question, but I'm kind of curious what you think about this. I know it's a weird question, but do you have any theories about why now? Why are conservatives just flipping out and cracking down harder than ever on women's rights?
You know, I have so many theories. And I guess part of it seems to me that when they have started seeing women making choices that where they control how they want to live their lives, when and if they want to have children, because they want to have a seat at a table that's also outside of parenting, if they want to have careers, if they want to be part of the decision-making process in the larger world, they're seeing the effectiveness of women. They're seeing that there's no longer a presupposition that this white guy rule is just going to be the way it is. And I think that it's a very simplistic answer I'm giving you, and it's one that I'm sure a lot of people have said in many different ways. But I do believe that when people start changing and asking the power structure to be revisited because they want to be part of it, and when they see women who can be collaborative and pick the best idea, not just their idea, it all becomes very threatening. And what better way to make sure that women aren't at the table hashing out ideas that are coming from all these places than to keep them subjugated and not in pregnant and non-sexual and constantly challenging themselves and questioning themselves about who they are sexually, who they want to be in the greater part of the world.
My guest today has been Liz Winstead. Her book is titled Liz Free or Die, and I highly recommend checking it out. It's available online or at your local bookstore. I also recommend following her on Twitter at Liz Winstead. Thanks for coming on to RealityCast, Liz.
Amanda, I'm so love blabbing with you. Can we please do it in person over drinks?
Yes, yes, absolutely. We need to do that very soon.
Thank you.
For sexual health and education geeks, if you're not watching Dan Savage's new program on MTV, well, what's wrong with you? It's really great stuff. The producers did a great job of trying to make it more than The Dan Show, though that probably would be as fun as well. Instead, they really go out of their way to take a snapshot of the sex culture on various college campuses around the country, find out where they differ and where they're the same. It's actually pretty fascinating, right down to the different standard issue fashions that kids wear and the willingness of kids to admit on camera in broad daylight that they're sexually active. Unfortunately, one thing seems to be constant across various campuses. Even as gay people become more accepted and passing out condoms in bars becomes the norm, there's still this myth out there that women can be sluts. I don't mean that it's a myth that women can have a lot of partners. Some do. But the myth is that this is a bad thing, and that it's uniquely a bad thing for women. Or, to be more specific, a lot of men still have this belief that they should be out there having as much sex as they want to and still be considered awesome, but that women who do the same thing are unlovable and undesirable.
Would you date a slut?
No.
Would you marry a slut?
No.
Would you hook up with a slut?
Yeah, of course.
Which makes him, by his own standards, a slut. And therefore, by his own standards, no one should want to marry him or date him, but instead just use him for sex since he has no value. Except I guarantee that he doesn't see it that way because he's a guy, and he's operating with an extreme double standard. I will say that while this whole thing made me uncomfortable because neither Dan nor his producer pointed out the hypocrisy and the unfairness right away, I am glad they went ahead and put that word slut out there. It's a meaningless word. As Dan jokes later in the episode, it's just someone who has more sex than you, or a woman you want to put down as worthless, regardless of her actual sexual choices. This attitude that there's girls you sleep with and then girls you marry damages women, but it also damages guys, as this fellow Dan talks to accidentally demonstrates. This guy is sad because a woman he was dating dumped him unceremoniously without explanation. And then he offers this.
We never had sex. You know, if I find a girl that I'm really into and can see a relationship with in the future, I don't need to take it so quickly. Is that an issue to girls?
It's an issue for some.
Yeah.
And if it was an issue for her, she's not the right girl for you. Because you're not the kind of guy that wants to rush into that with someone that you feel like you have a strong connection with. And so if she was like, why isn't he bounding me and disqualified? Well, okay, then
not
good
the right
riddance.
Yeah.
This is where I felt I had a disagreement with Dan. He basically treats this guy as if he just likes to take it slow, which is all good and fine. If that's what it is. But the guy doesn't just like to take it slow. He specifically said only with women he actually likes. So he's dividing women into two categories. Ones you can use for sexual gratification because you don't like them very much, and ones you do like, and so you don't want to screw it up by seeing them as sexual beings. Since Dan rants endlessly on his podcast about the Madonna whore syndrome, I found this oversight on his part to be a little strange. I think this young man would be happier in the long run if he stopped engaging in this dichotomy. The show got better over time when it came to Dan challenging the sexist, backwards attitudes about female sexuality.
Is it okay to make out with a lot of dudes, or is that slutty? Is it really an either-or question? Couldn't it be okay to make out with a lot of dudes and it be slutty? I think we need to talk about slut the way straight dudes talk about stud. Slut is female stud. Make it a term of empowerment? Yeah, it is okay to make out with a lot of dudes. Some people are going to think that's slutty in a negative way, and you don't make out with those dudes.
Considering some of the backwards attitudes being offered by students, both male and female, on this question, this was probably a mind-blowing answer. I'm a little startled that the basic issues of fairness would be so hard for this young generation to wrap their minds around. I don't know why. Mostly I've just seen a lot of data showing that these kids have more egalitarian values than the generations before. But when it comes to applying those values to gender, there's still a struggle. Dan also addressed this on another issue of fear of female sexuality.
I was wondering, how would we destigmatize female masturbation?
Raise your hand if you have a vagina. Do you masturbate? Sometimes? You're looking at me like, maybe once by accident, what does that face mean? I slipped and fell and masturbated. Dudes arrive at their first relationship knowing goddamn well how their d*** work, because they've been beating off for 5 or 6 years by the time they're 18. And we need to get girls dildos and vibrators at the same time boys start masturbating.
So check it out. It's a great show. And now for the Wisdom of Wingnuts. It's all one big issue edition. Liberals have a tendency to silo our issues, not seeing the connections between, say, immigrant rights and reproductive rights. But we shouldn't, because our opposition tends to see it as one big issue.
The Democrats are losing voters. They have to replace them. They're aborting voters, literally. They are aborting their own future voters. They need new voters. The illegal population is a gold mine for them. And that's why they don't want photo ID to vote.
Of course, there's no real evidence for his contention. Additionally, I get the impression that Limbaugh thinks that abortion is the primary form of birth control in this country. In fact, about 1 in 3 women will have an abortion in her lifetime, but about 99% will use contraception.
That's it for this week's edition of Reality Cast. Please tune in next week for another dose of reality in the sexual health debate. Visit www.rhrealitycheck.org and sign up for our weekly e-newsletter, various news feeds, and daily emails. Thanks for listening, and see you next week.